Congressman Mike Rogers. Mike, how are you?
I am doing well, sir. How are you?
Good. Our question of the day, we've been asking our listeners, should they increase or let the debt limit stay where it is? Yesterday, I saw a Fox News poll that said 65% of us want the debt ceiling held where it is. Now, after what it was explained to us what would happen should it not be raised, that number went down to about 35%. And I've been told that the economy, Wall Street, and loan rates would just be astronomically damaged should we not raise the debt ceiling. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm concerned about what happens. I think what I've determined over trying to figure out what happens is nobody really knows for sure what happens. Once the debt ceiling is hit, and remember, this is about paying bills that have already been paid. This is paying your credit card bill for things that you've already purchased. And so in the last 2 years, been an exponential rise in spending, and it hit that cap. And so the debate is, do you extend the cap without any changes? And that's where the argument is about. Speaker Boehner and people like myself are saying, hey, we can't continue to do this, so we need to have structural changes. And the president was arguing, hey, just give me the debt extension, we'll worry about it later. And so that's where the debate started. And what happens is that at a certain point after the debt, you only have so much revenue. Nobody really knows when that is. So you would prioritize your debt. You'd pay, say, Social Security checks and military pay and debtors, people who are lending you the money. They need to get paid as well if you ever want them to lend you money again. And so at some point you run out of cash that comes into the Treasury, and you have to start figuring out who doesn't get paid. And so nobody really knows the time. I mean, it's really a very complicated thing. And then what does that do? Do they downgrade our credit rating? And if they do, does that mean we're paying higher interest rates, which means the cost of borrowing money for the United States? And we're going to have to do this either way. If we get everything that we wanted, we're still going to have to borrow some money. What would that mean to the amount of money that we pay in interest versus we pay a Social Security check or a soldier or an FBI agent?
If I had to bet you a cup of coffee, does this deal get done or does the debt ceiling not get raised?
Oh, well, I'm an eternal optimist, so I'm going to say we're going to get a deal before it's done. I was in a meeting yesterday, and it seemed like we were as far away as we could possibly get. I'm not sure how that happened, but it's frustrating, and some people are getting dug in. I believe this is a complicated thing, and we ought to do what is in the best interests of the United States, all of the United States, and everybody that lives in the United States. And hopefully, with that in mind, we're going to get a deal. May not be everything I want, it may not be everything they want, but we've got to get something that, in my mind, does a couple of things, Tony. Changes the way Washington spends money. It just can't happen. And I think that 65% number you saw, people saying just let it go, is sheer frustration that the government doesn't quite get it, that, listen, you can't continue to spend this way.
What would happen if we decided, okay, we're not going to raise this and we're going to get into black, and we're going to do this in calendar year 2011? What would happen?
If we defaulted on August 2nd, you mean?
Yeah.
Or didn't raise the debt limit. We wouldn't actually default on August 2nd.
Yeah, let's just say we're going to cut to the bone.
Okay.
Could that be done in 6 months or a year? That's an impossibility.
Well, what you'd have to do is you do it over a 10-year cycle. So the big argument is, what is that number for the next 10 years that we continue to reduce? And if you don't break the spending curve now, it gets exponentially harder, right? Because your baseline is different. So if you're spending $100 this year, you're likely to spend whatever it is, say $104 next year. Then the same percentage cut doesn't do it. Do you understand? I hope I made that clear. And that's kind of complicated. So every year, so by year five, you're up to, let's say, $110 that you're spending every year. and you've got to figure out a way to get it back even below the 100. So every year that goes by, it gets harder. This thing, you know, everybody, as everybody knows in their family, things get more expensive. And so that's the trick. So you, if you don't break that spending curve early, it gets exponentially harder in the out years to get the spending back under a limit that we can afford in the United States.
Well, Congressman, you've got this fundamental question. How long do you keep funding a lot of programs? And it seems like the Democratic way is to take care of all these people who need help, who need assistance, make it easier for the middle class and the lower middle class, and tax the wealthy. And then the Republicans say, hey, the wealthy, the business owners are creating jobs. We have to let them have the capital to do that. And as a result, we can't put as much over here. How do you find balance?
Well, I do, and I'm going to disagree a little bit with your premise that the Republicans somehow are standing up for the rich. If you look at, if you avoid the whole problem at the table and say, I'm only going to take care of this certain set of the population, you are doing them more harm than good. And the policies today, I argue, if you want to look at what's happening in the middle class, it's because we've shaken ourselves away from this notion that we're all in this together. And by the way, the wealthiest Americans, the top 10%, pay 70% of all the taxes already, 70. 47% of Americans don't pay any income tax at all, not one penny. So we've already shifted the weight to one segment of our population. And you can say, well, that's great, they make a lot of money, and that's fine, except what money is left for them is the money that is used to generate jobs in the economy. If we want the middle class, you have to have somebody who's willing to hire somebody. And so my frustration is, they say that because it's great political cachet. I'm going to take care of the middle class. Really, your policies have gotten us to over $4 a gallon gasoline. That kills the middle class. The fact that there is no money left at the end of the day for loaning and other things means that the business people can't hire somebody, which kills the middle class.
Aren't there still a lot?
I think we have to shake ourselves out of this. We're all in this together.
Aren't there a lot of loopholes though for the rich and for many of the rich to get out of paying maybe whatever their fair share of taxes would be?
Well, there are certainly deductions just like everybody enjoys. The interest you pay on your house is a deduction, and you have to spend money to get money. And so a lot of the things that were talked about are things that where people have to spend money to get money. And that's why I have argued for a flat tax for years. I mean, this code is so screwed up. And we treat income differently. The hedge fund thing is a great example to me. Let me give you two quick examples if I can, Tony. And these hedge funds, they get taxed at something called a capital gains tax rate. And what that means is if someone takes money and invests it, and then that investment, they call it passive income, makes money. So I invest in, a new hot dog stand downtown with a group of investors. And this is a bad example because it wouldn't really work this way, but it's easier to understand. So a hot dog stand downtown, and we all the investors make, $10. That $10 is taxed at a 15% rate. If you're a small business owner and you invest in a hot dog stand down the street and you do it yourself, you take ordinary income, and it's taxed at like 31%. And so my argument is, and some people argue, well, you can't change the hedge fund because that's a tax increase. I would argue we should scrap all of that and say we shouldn't punish some type of investment income. And small businesses, by the way, when you talk about just raising taxes on the rich, 53% of all small businesses will get hit with that raise. And that's what concerns me most about our middle class and jobs. You're killing the very people who you want to put the people to work. And so my argument has been, we need to straighten this out. So the president loves to talk about the corporate jet. It's $4 billion. We're talking about trillions of dollars. But okay, you can do away with that. The reason it was put in the first place, which was long before I got here, was that they were trying to encourage the industry to sell jets. And by the way, when they sell jets, guess who? And most of these plants are unionized. They employ workers. And so we've got this tax code that seeks to promote companies from spending money in certain sectors, and they do it by saying, if you spend that money, we won't charge you as much taxes. And so those are the loopholes that people are talking about, and I agree, some of them we should eliminate or get rid of or reduce, but at the same time, what would be better is if we take a whole reduction of those, and then we put in a tax code that's lower and more competitive so that people can hire people. And I argue at the end of the day, we'll all be better off for it.
We're talking with Congressman Mike Rogers. Mike, I've got two more quick questions for you. Congressman Rogers is with the Energy and Commerce Panel and also the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. As a matter of fact, he is the Intelligence Committee Chair. Two questions for you. Gas has taken us for a roller coaster ride. Why is that happening? And it appears that we have some challenges with our airports and safety.
Yeah, on gasoline is the frustrating thing. You know, there's been studies and studies. I think there's been something like 9 studies, and every time the gas goes up, Congress says we're going to investigate the gas, and everyone says, yeah, let's go get them. The problem is we know what the answer is, and the answer is we have to have more production, and we have to have a continued path to reduce our consumption rates, which we're doing, and we're doing it in a way we can do, I should say, in a way that doesn't impact our economy. Actually, would impact it for the better. I mean, we spend, you know, when we stop drilling, we end up buying more money, sending more money overseas to buy more oil because we haven't stopped using the same amount of oil, but we have closed down our production in the United States. There's a pipeline in Alaska. If it gets below a third of its capacity, it has to shut down, and they are very close to that. We've been saying for years, you've got to get going up there and put environmentally safe oil into that pipeline, so we don't lose that capacity. Or guess what? Prices are going up again. Mexico is one of our largest importers, believe it or not, and they have not invested in their production. Their production is going down. So Alaska's going down, Mexico's going down, where we get a lot of oil, and the president closed down all the short, shallow water drilling off the coast of Louisiana and really hurt the economy and drove the prices up. So it's not magic. You can't close down production and expect prices to go down. And I do believe a lot of the folks on the other side of the aisle like the fact that we're at $4 and $5 a gallon gas, because and that they've said it for years because they think it would change our behavior. The problem is it's killing the economy. So we have a plan to get out there and get back in the production, put more supply out so you can bring down the price. And that's why the president released the strategic reserve, because supply matters to price. The problem was the way the world situation is, it didn't have a big enough impact to do anything on the price.
All right. So, well, we've got to run. I know you have to run, too. I can't wait to catch up with you again. Thanks so much, Congressman.
Hey, thanks, Tony. Again, have your listeners, if they have a better idea, we'd love to hear it. Call or email our office.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks.